Minute to play in the quarter. Jazz lead is 6. AB, stop and pop 3. Missed it. Donovan Mitchell rises off the trampoline, cocks the right hand and hammers, and a turnover by the Lakers back the other way. Oh, Donovan, don't do me like that. Wow, here he goes. Rises and fires for 3. Pow! The crowd is going Donovan!
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 30th of October. Trick or treat. We'll talk about the Jazz beating the Lakers on Saturday. Donovan Mitchell soaring from the sky. Great signs on Faves. A little concerned about one Jazz player. A lock theory and a visit with Locked On Lakers. That's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Glad to have you aboard today's Monday edition of Locked On Jazz. And you can listen to this show each and every day on your iTunes, your Google. You can tell Google Home to say, you just say, okay, Google, play podcast Locked On Jazz. You can say, it might have heard me. You can tell Alexa to play the program Locked On Jazz, and you can get it each and every single day we bring it to you. I'm the radio voice of the Utah Jazz. Okay, Google, stop. There we go. I'm going to have to take that out of the room if I do that as the open of the show. So I'm the radio voice of the Jazz, Jazz NBA insider, and glad to be with you each and every day here. All right, so I told you what we're going to hit on, a bunch of our regular stuff. The way we're opening shows this year after games is giving you a little numbers analysis of what took place on each game. So we'll do that with Lakers. We'll talk about Donovan's strong performance. Some great signs on Faves, a little concern, first quarter theory. And I talked to Locked On Lakers yesterday, and I just have the conversation, so I'm going to share it with you. We really talked mostly about the Lakers. But it's NBA talk if you want it. I'd strongly suggest going to Locked On NBA that's up. It's about three teams, Memphis, Detroit, and Orlando. They've been surprised so far in whether or not they're real or not. It's a pretty good conversation. So let's get it going. Today's show brought to you by Murdoch Chevy as well as ZipRecruiter. It's still truck month at Murdoch Chevy. All right, Jazz win 96-81. Pace of play was really slow. 90.4. Was the pace of play in this game. And that's interesting because the Lakers were the number one pace of play coming in. The Jazz were the slowest, one of the slowest pace of plays, and actually got slower. The Jazz came in about 94, and the game was 90. The Jazz offensive rating was a 106. So they were average. Except for the fact, actually, the Lakers have been surprisingly good defensively so far this year. But this kind of matches to a little bit of what we've seen so far this year with the Jazz, that on against average, you know, defenses, not particularly good defenses, Denver, the Jazz had a 109 offensive rating. Minnesota, we only had a 100 offensive rating, which is not a very good team. And then we had a 106 against the Lakers. So we've played some not very good offensive teams, and we're not blowing them up, which means that when we play teams like the Clippers, we're going to have tough nights, like a 90. So that's the only thing I would say there. Defensively, just absolutely brilliant again. Incredible. 89.6 was the defensive rating. So you're holding a team, even a bad team's only at 100, 10% below their regular performance. The Jazz defense is now fourth in the NBA. But there were some real changes, one or two changes to what the Jazz were doing. One was the Jazz offensive rebounded for the first time all year. So the Jazz have been really quiet on the offensive glass. They had not had a game in which they garnered more than 20% of the offensive rebounds, and they got 36% of all of their misses back. So a huge, huge change. 3 for Favors, 3 for Gobert, 3 for Rubio, 2 for Udo, and 2 for Donovan Mitchell. Really, 1 for Donovan Mitchell is all that mattered. because that's all anyone's talking about today, is that one for Donovan Mitchell that led the show today. I haven't put up highlights every single time, but that one has to go up. The other then disconcerting note is we turned it over 21% of our possessions again. So the last two games, we have been turning it over 20% of our possessions and three of the last four games. That's a crazy, crazy, crazy high number for the Jazz to be turning the ball over, and have got to figure this out. We will be the worst offensive team in the NBA if we don't figure this out. Okay, you're 30th in the league in turnovers, like we are right now, and we don't have the other ways to overcome that, I don't think. And I'm not a big guy who worries about turnovers a lot, but this is at a pretty high, almost alarming. Well, no, not almost alarming rate. We're six games in. Rubio's got to get it taken care of. He's been very sloppy with the basketball and a bunch of lobs to Gobert. They just have not connected yet. Threw one ahead pass that got over people. Donovan's turning it over at a very high rate. And he's got to slow down and stop making those turnovers. But it's hard to survive when one out of five possessions is not getting a shot off. And so that's a significant issue to keep an eye on as the year goes on. All right, so those are the basic advanced stats of reference. We didn't go to the free throw line much, which we're never going to do, but we're going to the line pretty rarely. Over to the tracking number, we got 51 open looks and we made 25. So unlike the Phoenix game, where the more I looked at it, we were just flat out tired. Donovan Mitchell gets 11 uncontested looks, makes 7. Rubio gets 10, makes 5. Rodney Hood has 11, makes 5. You know, we got uncontested looks, 51 of them, and made them. It's a make or miss league. And Phoenix, and the Clipper games, both were games we just didn't make shots. I mean, it sounds so mundane to just decide that that's the issue, but frankly, that's often a large part of the issue. There's one other thing we usually look at here. Oh, shot charts. So let's look at the shot charts on this one. The Lakers seemed so flustered by anything going on, trying to get around involving being near Rudy Gobert. They have, at least in my book, looked like they were avoiding heading toward Rudy at all costs. And he dominated the game, both offensively and defensively. Offensively dominated the game by rolling to the basket and having them worry about his role so much it opened up everybody else. They were 6 of 28 at the rim, which actually is not terrible. They were 4 of 15 in that mid-range or in that paint area before they got to the basket. As the Jazz continue to do, they don't allow a lot of corner threes. So the Lakers were 1 of 5 on corner threes, and they were just 4 of 16 above the break. That may not be a very good shooting team. And young kids don't shoot the above the break three very well early in the season. And so their Kuzma and Ball are not shooting that well. The Jazz were 17 of 27th rim, 1 of 9 in the paint non-restricted, 6 of 12 in the mid-range, and then Barry had 10 corner three attempts, hit 4 of 10, and 9 of 21 from above the break. So offensively, the ball went in. It's really sometimes that simple. And tonight against Dallas, you'd hope the same, because Dallas comes in 20th in the league defending the three, 28th in the league overall defensively, 29th overall against the shot, last in the league defending the restricted area. So you would hope that the Jazz can find a way to have success offensively tonight. This is kind of a good test to what I just brought up, that even against some of the lesser teams, we're ending up with just average offensive nights, and when you probably want to have a little bit better than average night when you're playing a bad defensive team, and we haven't totally shown that yet so far. In regards to what we're shooting, we're 13th in the league in the restricted area, 21st in the league in the paint non-restricted area. We're the third best mid-range shooting team, now second best. That's probably not sustainable. We're right about 50%. The only team better is Golden State at 57. Our corner three shooting is at 38%. Our above the break shooting is just at 31%, 24th in the league. So that above the break number is the one that I think we have to watch. That's where the make or miss really starts to play. And hopefully when Donovan gets a little more comfortable and slows down a bit, those shots go in for him. And that probably is the player that changes that single-handedly. Rubio, I'm not convinced, actually. When he catch and shoots, he's fine. When he puts it on the deck beforehand, he's not great. Defensively, we're the eighth best team defending the restricted area. That's probably going to get a little better, if not hold. We're the third best team defending the paint non-restricted area, which is exactly what we always are with Rudy. We're 23rd in the mid-range. We're the number one team defending the corner three in the league. We always kind of have been. We're 21st in the league defending the above the break three, which so those that's actually we'll stay right there on all of those all year. As I mentioned today, Dallas 29th in the league defending the restricted area, allowing 68% shooting at the rim. 29th in the league allow in the mid-range, and we're good at that right now at 48%. 23rd in the league above the break threes. Offensively, they're the worst mid-range shooting team in the league. They're pretty good at defending the they're very good at shooting the corner three, and they shoot a lot of them. So we'll see whether the Jazz can keep Rick Carlisle's system out of the three. Dallas is shooting 41% of their shots as threes this year. They take the second most in the league behind Houston, and the eighth most amount of corner threes. So, good challenge. Team the Jazz should beat. So, Donovan got it going. The dunk was awesome. Was it ever. And electrifying and played with that zest that he showed in summer league. And that's been one of the questions I've wondered is, can he maintain that for 82 games? I mean, that's a real, that's a gift to be able to play like that. It's not easy to play like that either. And it got him going. He got out of control and turned one over in there. And that's worth kind of even remembering. So three-play sequence is an incredible slam dunk, pull-up three, and then he turns it over going out of control. You said, you know, you gave up two the other way. Those are big when you make those little mistakes. That's what he's got to get rid of. It was interesting to me. The fan reaction in some ways on our post game was like, is he going to win Rookie of the Year? Yeah, I mean, you can go take your one day and get and having 22 points is a big deal. But in four of his other games this year, he's been dreadful. So let's not start judging him game by game. There's a lot of athleticism, there's a lot of talent. He's going to have to develop a way to get off one foot around the basket. Because in fast breaks right now, he wants to bring that other foot down, and it's negatively impacting him and his ability to finish in the open court. But he was really special and electric. That dunk was tremendous. He ignited the crowd. He ignited the game. And it was cool to see. And then he drove to the basket and finished the game. Quinn had him finish instead of Rodney, which I thought was maybe the most telling. Because they needed somebody to attack the basket, and he did it. He has 12 turnovers in the last three games. So still lots of work and understanding for him, but there's no signs on him that he will do anything but that. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. The Tyson Murdoch represents the Murdoch family there, and the Murdoch family has been represented in Utah selling Chevys for 91 years. And what I can tell you is, as I've gotten to know the Murdochs, the real pride that they have in serving you as a member of the Utah community and making sure that you leave feeling as though you were touched by a family, by people who care and are interested in how you are and what your experience was. They call it no regrets. And then they do the little things. So you have lifetime car washes, oil changes. As part of the Murdoch guarantee, They have their service hours extended so that that can help you. That's what the Murdochs are all about. Then we get to Chevys. And when we're talking Chevys, we're talking about the only truck line that has all three segments right now. The heavy duty, the light duty half-ton truck, the Silverado, the mid-size truck, Colorado. You got the Colorado diesel. They're made with a unibody frame, which is a safer one frame. I mean, Chevy runs deep, right? Chevy is bread and butter, whatever you want to call it. America, Chevy, 91 years. Chevy family is a Chevy family. And if you are a Chevy family or you want to be a part of that, it's do it at Murdoch out in Woods Cross. The SUVs are out there as well. The Tahoes, the Equinox, the Suburbans. The Traverse has three rows of seating. The Trax. You've got the trucks I just mentioned. And you've got the Equinox and the Cruze and the Trax as well. 25% off for the final day of October. Final 2 days of October on a bunch of those cars, and it's truck month still here in November. So if it's time to go get a truck, go do it at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. Say hi to Tyson for me when you stop by as well. And just get in one of those Chevy trucks. And vroom. All right. Some great signs on Derek Favors. Some really, really great signs on Derek Favors. And the biggest one to me that was obvious that he wasn't healthy last year was his rim shooting. So Favors is always rim shooting. Kyle Kuzma, I'll talk about this with Anthony in the Locked On Lakers part of this, which we'll add on the back. Rim shooting is always a great indicator of just pure athleticism. When you look at who the best finishers are around the rim, it's always LeBron. It was Carmelo in his prime, Paul George. Gordon Hayward was always in there, which is always a sign of what a good athlete he is. And then it was Tyson Chandler, and obviously, well, Derek was a 71% rim finisher for much of his life. And then all of a sudden last year, he became a 61% rim finisher. Well, it was really bad. Like, he just couldn't get up. He's 15 of 18 so far this year in the restricted area. So that's pretty exciting. I mean, he's been just terrific in and around the basket. The other one is his mid-range game is pretty strong right now. He's making that mid-range shot. And if you look at him the last two nights, he's suddenly averaging 15 points and 8 rebounds a game, which is exactly what he averaged from 2014, 2015, and 2016. So there are some signs that a little allergy hit this morning or something. There's some signs that Derek's back. And that's pretty tremendous. That Derek Favors is back being the big guy he's been. Because if Derek can do it, that is tremendous. The other one that I took a look at was the Rudy Gobert-Derek Favors combined numbers. And they are still killing people defensively. They are so great defensively, it's hard to believe. Now, offensively, it feels so clunky. And we're having a really hard time starting games right now. But there are some numbers in here that are pretty interesting. So the first one is the last two seasons in 670 minutes, the Jazz defensive rating is a 96.2. When Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert are on the floor together. Over the last 3 years, 1,500 minutes, it's a 99.6. And they're plus 6. They're plus 8.6 over the last two seasons. So, when you put those two together, it's the defense is just stifling. Now, we got to figure out how to score in it, and the offensive rating is a 104.8 over the last two seasons, and we'll watch it this year. The other one that's interesting is that Rudy Gobert and Joe Johnson, which struggled in the playoffs, is struggling again. A little surprising, but Joe's struggling. And I don't think I'm going to put a high level of concern on Joe struggling. But I am going to, you know, at some point, despite all the Bikram yoga, despite the incredible professionalism, despite the constant preparation at all times, age will catch him. And he's 36 right now. I doubt this is it, that it's caught him. But it's a start that's pretty unusual. He's not hitting the three right now. I think he's about 2 of 12, 2 of 14 to start the year. And he doesn't seem quite right. So, let's keep an eye on whether or not he turns the table and gets it back rolling again. But as of right now, he's 1 of his last 9. He's 2 of 14. He's 0 for 5 on the corner threes. He doesn't seem quite right. And I don't have an answer on why. He's so incredibly professional that I feel pretty comfortable he's going to get himself going. But right now, that lineup, when he's on the floor with Rudy, which was a key lineup for us last year, has not been good yet this year. And so you got to keep an eye on that. By the way, tonight, Jazz game is family night. $96 for 6 tickets and 6 hot dogs. Oh, wait. Well, it might be that for us tonight. That actually is for Monday the 13th. But I would guess tonight is too. Call 325-2999. Call 325-2999 and ask. I think tonight would be also $96, 6 tickets, 6 hot dogs. It's all brought to you by Mountain America Credit Union. So make sure it's a pretty good night to come out to the arena. If you are in need of great talent for your business but short on time, then the answer is ZipRecruiter. You don't have time for that huge stack of resumes to find the perfect hire. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. We did it on the Locked On Podcast Network, actually. You can then rest knowing your job's being seen. The ZipRecruiter puts in a smart matching technology to work. It actively modifies qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting so you receive the best possible matches. And that's really where ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidate finding you. It finds them for you. That's why 80% who post on ZipRecruiter get quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. So therefore, go to ZipRecruiter and let you try it for free. That's right. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/LOJazz. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOJazz. And you can try ZipRecruiter for free and find out why everybody is using ZipRecruiter to get the best talent for their company. All right, so I have a theory. I'm not sure it's right, but I share these with you, that first quarters early in season are indicators a little bit of where you are as a team. I don't know if this is true at all, but let me share where we are. Washington is the best first quarter team in the league right now. Orlando's 2, Clippers 3, Portland 4, New Orleans 5, Toronto 6. Cleveland is awful. Minus 24 in first quarters per 100 possessions. Dallas, Sacramento, Minnesota, San Antonio, Detroit are the 6 teams that are the worst. The Jazz, offensively, are 30th in first quarters, last, and second best defensively. Might be a decent indicator. Best offensive team in first quarters, Miami, Golden State, New Orleans, Washington, Houston, and Orlando. The worst offensive teams, Utah, Cleveland, Lakers, Sacramento, Atlanta, Milwaukee. The best defensive teams in the first quarter. Reason I believe this is your players are healthy. You're playing your primary rotations. And early on, it's kind of who you are. I don't know. It might not be true. Best defenses are the Clippers, the Jazz, the Bucks, the Raptors, and the Hawks. The worst defenses are Dallas, Cleveland, Golden State, Detroit, and Sacramento. So keep an eye on it tonight. Dallas, worst offensive first quarter team against the worst offensive first quarter team. Makes it kind of fun. By the way, eye-opening, we find out that the two things I think are like worth chewing on league-wide right now. We find out the Clippers are better without Chris Paul because they move the ball and run creative stuff. And two, when the continued amazing play of Victor Oladipo and Sabonis continue in Indiana, that maybe the problem for the playing at Oklahoma City is that players can't play with Russ. Not that they're not good enough. Just a thought. All right, let's turn it over. Here's my conversation. This is long with Anthony Irwin. So mostly it's about the Lakers. So I'm not telling you to leave the show. I'm just telling you that if you don't care about the Lakers and some Lonzo Ball talk and Kyle Kuzma and some general NBA talk and some Jazz talk in there, that you're not that go to Locked On NBA and listen to that instead. Murdoch Chevy and ZipRecruiter were your sponsors today's program. Thanks very much for your support. Here's my conversation with Anthony Irwin and Locked On Lakers.
All right, I'm joined now by my boss, David Locke. How are you doing, David?
It's such an unfriendly way to start the show.
I used to do that. I used to bug when I worked at Silver Screen. I used to bug Drew with that kind of entrance. So I kind of wanted to see how you would handle it. So
yeah, I don't really like that. How about the person who's just doing way a lot of work for this network, and hopefully so everybody else can and have success with it.
Yeah. So I'll say, and now I'm joined by the guy who makes my life as easy as he possibly can, David Locke.
Which is probably only slightly, you know, which is only variable easy. So
well, you keep making me work with Harrison. So like at some point, you know, I might have to say enough is enough there.
I actually don't know that you work together. I think I've never been on with both of you at the same time.
It's not a coincidence. I don't like to let him talk to other people. It's kind of I get nervous because he's kind of awkward.
Yeah, it happens, and that's even without looking at him.
All we need to do is make a draft joke, and we got the triple play.
There we go.
So we're gonna talk. The Lakers are about to play the Jazz, and I always like talking to you because I respect your basketball analysis. How do you feel about the Lonzo Ball stuff so far this season?
So I mean, it was interesting last night when we saw him, and I have Ron Boone, who's former Laker and Jazz player, has been in the league for 50 years, and Thurl Bailey on my show at different points. So both of them seemed very impressed by him, and both talked about just his calmness and his how he looked. I thought he looked tired last night, or whenever we air this. So I saw him last night on Saturday, but I thought, you know, that was interesting to me that both these two guys, who as pros watch the game, and they both saw this calmness and this understanding of tempo and this collectiveness to what they were doing. There was one play that really concerned me, and this is just basically reiterating my only concern I've had on him the whole time, and that is that wonky shooting motion just isn't going to work in the NBA. And there was a play that happened, I think, third or fourth quarter, where if I remember correctly, the Lakers got one of their 1 million offensive rebounds they had there for a period of time, kicked out to Ball on the right wing. It was a shot that an NBA player has to get off, and frankly, an NBA player actually might have to make. And Joe Ingles closed, and you could see him have to rush the tempo of that shot, and he missed it pretty badly. And that's the only concern that I have on him right now, is just that his shooting window might have to be excessively large to get shots off in the league, and that's not great. No. Otherwise, not real worried about it, and I would say if you look at all the rookies, whether it's Kyle Kuzma or Alonzo Ball or Donovan Mitchell or whomever else, Markelle Fultz doesn't count because he won't shoot, but the on regards to all of them, they're above the break 3-point shooting in the opening weeks of the season is terrible. And so
that's just because the game's faster and the distance is longer, and so I wouldn't worry about that at all.
Yeah, I would agree on the shot. The thing that worries me about the shot is he jumps really far forward. It's one thing, it looks weird in and of itself because he shoots from the wrong side of his body, but I've noticed as the season went along, or as I've seen more and more of his shot, is that he needs a lot of space to shoot just because he launches himself forward. And that's not great because in the NBA, I mean, Joe Ingles is no... It could be one thing if Rudy Gobert was the one closing out on him and you had all that length to worry about, but Joe Ingles shouldn't freak somebody out when he's closing out on him. And yeah, I know the play that you're talking about, and it was painfully obvious that either he needs to stop shooting and lunging forward the way he does, or he might need to completely rethink his shot. And we've seen how that's worked out for Markelle Fultz because they tried to retool his shot, and he's out indefinitely now because I think his agent at one point said them rethinking his shot hurt his shoulder, which is insane to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot going on there, so I'm not quite sure what.
Yeah.
What's happening there, and probably inappropriate to speculate on some of those issues.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other side, though, is that Joe Ingles, who is shooting 54% from three and was third in the league last year in three-point shooting, had to rework his shot a little bit because it was too slow and has really changed and developed a quick-release catch-and-shoot three that he uses. And so it is very doable, and Lonzo has a touch. So, the only thing I think is insane that we do to all these guys, and, you know, our fans are doing it today over Donovan Mitchell, like, he's going to be an all-star. Like, okay, well, a week ago, he was, like, not going to make the league.
Yeah.
And I think there's a chance that Lonzo Ball is Ricky Rubio, mm-hmm. not Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's an outlandish comment. Like, being a starter in the NBA is really hard. And being an all-star in the NBA is really, really rare.
What's funny?
Dame Lillard has played one all-star game, right?
Yeah. Yeah, especially in that position. Saying somebody's going to be an all-star is pretty crazy. But it's funny that you mentioned Ricky Rubio, because Laker fans listening to this right now are going to say, it'd be great if he turned out to be Ricky Rubio, because he, for whatever reason, always kills the Lakers. Always.
Oh, yeah, he had a good night last night, too.
It's a weird thing.
I think the only team he's ever he shoots better than the Lakers is the Jazz. And we took care of that problem.
I think the Lakers might have to trade for him just to take care of the same problem in the same way. Maybe we can clear
him. We'll take Lonzo Ball. I just said they're even. We're good.
What do you think about the stuff going on away from the court, though? Because that seems to be more of a focus. The LaVar Ball stuff seems to be more of a focus than Lonzo's game itself, which I find asinine.
I have not really digested it in a manner by which I've thought to analyze it. It doesn't seem like it's good, mm-hmm. On the simplest terms, to have that type of spotlight put on you.
Mm-hmm. He was already going to have a spotlight. He was always going to play under the bright lights because he's a Laker. Like, it's a combination. So the theory I have is I think LaVar Ball, who has calmed down, like after he made the stay in your lane comment, he has not been as obnoxious. And I think he learned in that case, and he was absolutely wrong to say that. But I think he learned in that case that, okay, there is a line here. I gotta toe that line. I can't go past that again. And so the people who are saying that they hate Lonzo Ball for LaVar Ball, they tend to be the people that I've recognized who weren't going to like Lonzo anyway because he's a Laker. Like the Celtics fans saying that they don't like Lonzo Ball because of LaVar Ball is crazy to me. You weren't going to like him anyway because it's a Laker-Celtic thing. It's just weird.
I don't think it's helping him, but I'm also not one who thinks it's really going to impact his career, right? He's either going to be good enough or he's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of bad parenting situations, and they don't help.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen players get through them in their careers. I'd rather not mention who I'm talking about. I've seen some of them not get through them in their careers. And so it's true that parents can derail a career It's more often when the player, either the parent's putting too much pressure and having a bad influence, or talking to the player too much. And that would be my concern, is mm-hmm. that there's too much, like, you need to have one voice coming at Lonzo. That's Luke Walton and his teammates. And then maybe in some circumstances, an agent and someone who's going to call you on your stuff, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's what's really, like, when you're out drinking and partying and you're not ready to play and it's beginning to impact you, you need somebody to say, like, dude, be a pro when you're a young kid. Because every, you know, or, hey, stop worrying about this and play. Or somebody who, I've lost faith in myself because I'm shooting 34% and we're at the 20th game of the season, that you can talk to is going to give you that positive feedback that helps you at that time. That's the outside voice you need. Too often I've seen the parent who is telling their kid they're so great and the coach sucks and that's why they're having a bad time, or ignoring because they're so dead set on making money themselves as the parent, they're ignoring the fact that their kid has gone off the rails and isn't willing to do anything to step in there and give the tough love to the kid when they need it. And then, you know, then there's, you know, there was a parent who sat in the front row at like every game and then would criticize the coach to the player every night. Like, okay, well, that's just anti-productive. Mm-hmm. And so that's the stuff. Arguing with Stephen A, I don't know if it bothers me, but I'd like to, you know, the one thing I guess on this, if it's a negative impact, is, are those the areas where he's going to suddenly have an impact? You know, Robert Swift's a Southern California kid whose parents clearly had a negative impact on his career. I don't see LeVar Ball doing that, but that's the area. Like, is he going to be blaming Luke Walton when 20 games in the season Lonzo Ball is shooting 32%? Because Lonzo Ball is going to be shooting 32% 20 games in the season.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to happen.
Probably 80 games into the season, if we're being
right,
completely
honest.
Right,
yeah. I mean, like, rookies shoot below 40%, and I think he's going to be particularly low. I mean, the number that jumps out to me on him right now is the restricted area shooting, mm-hmm. which most rookies go through, but his is particularly bad. And that's always a little bit of a sign. Like, Kyle Kuzma's restricted area shooting should have you really, really, really excited about it. Because if you go look at the best restricted area shooters, they're always the most elite athletes in the game. And there's a chance that Lonzo Ball is not a good enough athlete to play inside 5 feet of the rim, and that's never going to change. And that would be an inhibitor for his future success.
The athleticism stuff, because the counter example would be Steph and Kyrie, who aren't leapers by any extent, but he needs to learn how to utilize angles. And I think what I've noticed is, one, he's moving too fast. So he's moving too fast to especially elevate off of one foot. And two, the angles he attacks a basket with don't make much sense for somebody who isn't going to elevate over people. And that,
right, I mean,
that's something
just a Rubio comparison. Rubio's career at the rim is 47%,
mm-hmm.
which is really not good.
Yeah. And that's about where Lonzo is? Is he like 40? What's that?
I think Lonzo's worse.
Yeah, because I saw that you put out the poll the other day on Twitter, and I think it was around either – maybe I want to say 45 or 47. I forget what it was.
He was 9 of 22 going into last night, and I think he was 0 for 2 last night around the rim.
Mm-hmm.
I think he only had 3 field goals last night that were all threes.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a Morey Ball kind of guy. You mentioned Kuzma. He's a Utah kid. Did you see much of Kuzma? Like, when you were, because he played at Utah, did you see this coming from Kuzma?
So the honest answer to that is no, I did not. Uh-huh. I'm so interested in the NBA, I don't watch much college.
Yeah.
I did not see him. But boy, I mean, talk about looking the part,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything about him looks right. He's long. He's athletic. He's long around the basket. Everything about him looks right. And if you look at his three-point shooting right now, I think it's at 20-some-odd percent, but it's an above-the-break issue. He's 4 of 16 above the break going into last night. Around the rim, he's 15 of 19.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's a real find. He's you know, he's an NBA player, rotational player with a high possibility to be a starter. Though he's old, so he's... His upward tick is not going to be as significant as some others.
is he good enough? So the conversation out here has been mostly, all right, well, if Kuzma's going to be as good as he looks like he's going to be, you might have to move either Larry Nance Jr. or Julius Randle. Do you see that from Kuzma, or would you still hold on to Nance and Randle for as long as you possibly can?
Randle's growth in the last 2 years is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Nance's limited ability to he had a shot last night, but he's 4 of 16 outside the restricted area.
Mm-hmm. Won't shoot. Like, he just
he shot 40% on long twos at a period of last year. I had down in my notes.
Mm-hmm.
You can't play that position and not shoot and be 4 of 16 outside the restricted area.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's going on with that right now, but that's not a viable answer.
And the other concern too is that he isn't good enough defensively. It's one thing when you're a Roberson or any kind of, I mean, you have Cephalosha on your own Utah team, and if you're good enough on defense to make up for being actively bad on offense, that's one thing. But that isn't Nance. He hasn't improved enough defensively to warrant continuing to be out there on the court.
It didn't work last night, but I do think that Luke Walton speed lineup with Randle as your center is a pretty interesting idea.
Well, it's tough to work against Gobert.
Right. Well, it was interesting. I thought last night was a really interesting coaching game. Both coaches kind of went to what they went to. Joe Johnson was not playing well enough, I think, to give Quinn many other answers.
Mm-hmm.
But Luke stayed in with that speed lineup, which he went to Bogut for a little while. He committed his flagrant foul of the night, which they didn't call. and unless he's got some weird twitch, he committed a flagrant foul. And then the Jazz stayed with Favors and Gobert to close. It was just interesting, right, to see the speed versus the size in that matchup.
Mm-hmm. I would say, generally speaking, in 2017, that speed lineup usually comes out on top, but against that type of size, against that player, Gobert, and because of how inexperienced the Lakers' speed lineup is, I didn't expect it to work last night, and it played out about as how I would have expected it.
It needs some better personnel around it, shooting-wise. Also, the Lakers were playing 3 games in 4 nights last night,
mm-hmm.
and the Jazz had 2 nights off. And I just, the margin in the NBA between teams is pretty slim. And, you're talking about 450 best players in the world, and even the Lakers, who are going to win, 25, 28 games this year or something. And Phoenix, who's going to win 20 this year, and the Jazz, who are going to probably win somewhere between 35 and 40 this year. Like, the margin on those three teams is pretty slim. So Utah plays Phoenix. Phoenix has been home for 5 days. Jazz are playing their 5th game in 8 nights and their 4th game in 6 nights. And the Jazz look sluggish and miss a ton of shots. And the Lakers play the Jazz having played back-to-back in 2 games in 3 nights in 4 for the second time in a short period of time, I think it was. Well, then the Lakers look bad. Early in the season, particularly with this year, where there's some funky differences on how teams are starting scheduling, I think the schedule had a huge part of that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where I was interested to see the coverage of Utah after Hayward left, and a lot of people had them higher than I thought, than I anticipated. Where do you think that was coming from?
I didn't see that. So maybe you thought and where I thought they were are two different things.
Oh, okay.
The issue on the Jazz is if they're 20th in the league offensively, then they might win 50 games.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to be 1, 2, or 3 defensively.
Mm-hmm.
If they're 25th in the league offensively, then they're going to struggle. And I don't know where they are on that. Like, they might be 25th. In the first quarter of games right now, they're 30th, which is always something I look at very early. I love, one of my number one indicators I watch early in seasons is what teams' offenses are in the first quarter of games.
Why is that?
Because it's everyone playing their best guys in their first primary rotation in the first 10 games of the season. I think it's a great indicator of who's got what and how good they are.
Huh. I mean, Walton, you probably wouldn't be a fan of watching Walton because he refuses to play the Lakers' best five players as starters. But, yeah, I mean, that makes sense as a theory. I could roll with
And so, right now the Jazz are 30th in the league offensively and second in the league defensively with rating numbers that are just insane. If you follow that aspect of NBA, the league average offense is about 106, 107. Mm-hmm. The Jazz offensive rating is 83.
Oof.
Their defensive rating, the best in the league last year was the Spurs at about 100, is 86.7.
Dang.
Right? So...
So Kyrie Irving was... And
so I have no idea. I mean, it's really interesting. I need 10 or 15 games to play around with this, but it's a fascinating way to look at the game and to see what's going on in those first quarters, because I also think early in the season when you're down 20 and you make a little comeback in the fourth quarter, it can really skew your numbers and your irrelevance.
So
that's the other first quarter numbers.
Kyrie Irving was worried about the court he was playing on in Milwaukee, but we might have to check Utah's court for actual mud.
No, I mean, those numbers are it's Locked On Jazz on Monday, but it's those numbers are just incredible. I mean, a defensive rating of 86.7 is unheard of, only surpassed by the offensive rating is actually self-imposed, right? You're just not very good. The fact that you've played six different teams and have a combined defensive rating of 86.7 is actually far more remarkable than being that bad offensively.
Yeah, I mean,
Jazz have played good offense. Denver, Minnesota, Oklahoma City.
Yeah, those are good offensive teams. That's insane.
Right.
I mean, if Gobert doesn't win Defensive Player of the Year and those numbers continue, then what are we even voting on that award for?
He hasn't been great yet.
What's that?
He hasn't even been great yet.
Oh, he looked good against the Lakers.
Yeah, he was pretty good in that game.
Where do you think the Jazz go from here, though? Because my one concern is always the treadmill of mediocrity. Do you think the Jazz see where the growth comes from on this team? I mean, I think that the player who really needs to improve is probably Rodney Hood, right? Because Gobert is great. Rubio is Rubio at this point. And Hood is kind of the guy who needs to take a leap if Utah really is going to improve. And Devin and Mitchell. Mitchell is is going to improve.
It's either Dante Exum or Rodney Hood, and then Dante's out. So so it's probably it might be Donovan Mitchell. I don't know. We'll have to see on what Rodney's capable of doing on any consistent basis. The one thing I just think's interesting in all these conversations is so Minnesota and Denver, we talk about so positively, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, they ranked 29th in the league defensively. Denver did last year, and Minnesota was 25th. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're good offensively. The Jazz are the inverse of those teams.
Yeah.
And yet, we worry about all the things. Everyone's saying the same thing you are. I'm not sure what I think of that.
With the shiny toys.
If you're worried about the Jazz and where they're going, okay, but they have the most dominating defensive player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have a player that will always allow them to be elite defensively, then they should have a portion of their team that's always elite.
Mm-hmm.
Then they should be all right.
I'm not really a big Michael Malone fan. I don't think he's – I mean, he had Jokic leading them to the best offense over a 40-game span last year and decided that he's going to run his offense through Paul Millsap this year, which is kind of interesting. But I think it has a lot to do with people not really talking about defense the way they talk about offense. They got the shiny toys, Minnesota does, and they're, Karl Anthony Towns looks great offensively, has been terrible defensively, and people just for whatever reason, and well, we know the reason, it's not shiny, people don't regard defense the way they regard offense.
that we don't have analytics for it.
Mm-hmm. Last thing before we go here. Last time we talked, in for much of last season, the topic was Brandon Ingram and what he wasn't doing. What did you see from Ingram in Utah on Saturday night that, you know, if you want to draw a conclusion either way, which way would you go?
Well, I thought he showed three or four flashes that should really excite people, right? He got up and over Gobert on three drives to the basket. Like, there's five, ten, seven players in the league that can do something of that nature. So that should have you pretty excited. My concern on Brandon Ingram his entire career has been this just, like, throwaway notion, well, he'll gain weight. Like, why do we know that? like he'll gain weight. Like, really? Because that body doesn't look to me like it's going to gain weight. Like, it's really slim.
Yeah. His shoulders especially are really narrow.
Right. So, I mean, I don't even know what I'm talking about, right? I don't have any idea. I'm not a medical. I don't have any knowledge of this at all. Mm-hmm. But it's just really interesting to me this whole entire time that everybody has ever talked about Brandon Ingram. Like, well, when he gains weight. Like, well, okay, but what happens if he doesn't? Like, then he's Anthony Randolph.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's a very old research project I did many years ago, but it's, and he's actually not had this problem yet, but it's worth keeping an eye on. If you're 6'10 and taller, and I guess he's listed at 6'9, so he might not classify, but it fits.
Mm-hmm. It's close enough.
Weigh under 220 or over 270, you can't stay healthy in this league.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, you just don't. So the big guys are Peck, Curry, Yao Ming. Shaq was the most healthy of any big guy ever.
And he had his slew of stuff, too.
Right. And then you go to the skinny guys, Brad Sellers and Anthony Randolph. I would just say this. Like, go do a web search on – like, I think Ingram's taller than 6'9", by the way. I know he's listed that, but he sure plays taller. Maybe it's just the arms. But just go do a search on 6'9", under 200.
Mm-hmm.
How many guys are there?
There aren't very many. He's really weird, especially in person. It really stands out when he's going up against other NBA guys and they're grown men. And him and Lonzo both look so slight out there. In Lonzo, I could see maybe putting on a little bit more weight. His shoulders are broader for his body than Ingram's are. But yeah, that's an interesting stat. And I bet the findings would make a ton of sense on that. In terms of skills and defensively, do you think he can put it together there, or do you think it just always comes back to the body?
Oh, he's still got a long way to go before I'm going to say no on that. I mean, I think there's a lot of good signs on him. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a bad rookie year. He's 19 years old. Who cares? But no, those dribble drives to the basket are real. That length is real. He seems like a good kid. That's real. His numbers at Duke were real. There's a lot of real when it comes to him, a lot of it.
And he has great taste in which podcasts to go on, so that's also
right.
Good.
No, I, you know, I mean, could he be Scotty? You know, I think his upside is what, Scotty Pippen.
Yeah, I'd roll with that.
That's his upside. There's probably, but the only concern I have, and this is just universal. Like, I always love this one. Like, when. This is, I can try to think of a million examples, but like Kendall Marshall came out of UNC and everyone's like, oh, he's like Andre Miller. And I'm like, okay, well, tell me one other player that's like Andre Miller that's in this league.
Yeah.
And you can't find it, right? So when you can't find very many other comps for a player, like Andre Miller was really special. He's, you know, had his weaknesses and this and that, but he was really, really special in his ability to play at that size without speed, without athleticism. So find me the other 6'9", 195-pound guys, and then give me that listing. And when there's not many of them, and there's not more than one comp, then I think you got to get a little, not nervous, but you have to just be a little realistic of what you're looking for.
Yeah, what you're hoping for. Absolutely. Well,
but this,
go ahead.
He and like Dante Exum's the same way. Dante may, you know, may never know or whatever. With that injuries, and maybe we'll still find out. Like every time I watch Dante, and he still hasn't figured out how to be an NBA player. I was like, oh, I know why he's drafted fifth. Like every time I watch Brandon Ingram, there's no question to me why he's drafted second. That doesn't necessarily mean he becomes an NBA star. It's just there's no doubt why he should have been drafted second. Like no question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never. I mean, especially because people in his draft, that draft was abysmal. So it's not like they were stars in the making behind him.
Yes.
All right. Well, this was a ton of fun. You can check out you guys if you follow Locked On Lakers. I guarantee you listen to Locked On NBA and Locked On Jazz. David, thank you very much for hopping on with me. This was a lot of fun.
Great. Fun. We have a fun week coming up on we're doing our Locked On NBA this week is What Is Real. So we're checking in, I think, with Memphis, Orlando, and Detroit and seeing if any of what their starts are actually real. And then we have either the coach or a very kind of a fun guest coming this week as well. So it should be good.
All right, everybody, if you listen to Locked On Lakers, make sure you keep an eye out for that because David does great work. I don't say this very often about people, but his analysis to me, I rarely disagree with David's analysis. So that's something to keep an eye out for.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Anytime.